This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Okay, what's happening? How's everybody doing on this Monday around the country here? Tiki and Tierney coming to you from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home, it's much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams for 30 years. They've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Tiki and Tierney, of course, CBS Sports Radio, a modified version on CBS Sports Network, radio.com, Sirius XM Channel 206. And the show rolls on. What up, TK? How you doing today?
All is fantastic, other than the usual stuck at home doldrums that everybody's talking about. Mm-hmm. I keep telling people it's Groundhog Day over and over and over and over again. We even did schoolwork over the weekend.
Ooh.
Some reading and Ooh. A little bit of math. But I think Ooh. I'm starting to wear off my geekdom on my oldest daughter because, mm-hmm. or not my oldest daughter, but you know what I mean. My 6-year-old daughter yeah. that's here because I have 10-year-old twins. But I have her watching math on YouTube. You okay. know how kids get like obsessed with YouTube and they watch this nonsense?
Yes.
Like, people playing with babies and
yes.
stupid toys.
And yes.
Like, how about you watch something educational?
I hear
you. So I turned her on to this like math for kids ya. YouTube channel and yeah. she loves it. So I'm turning it into a little geeky tiki.
Little geeky tiki. Listen, there's a lot on the YouTube channel that obviously is great. And then there's a lot, like, sometimes I have to make sure it's not anything twisted that's kind of inserted in there.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they'll watch a show, and it'll expire, and it might just lap into the next one. And, like, say if Kinsley was watching something with Frozen 2, or just an excerpt from Frozen 1, whatever it might be. Or this weekend, she was watching something from Broadway Frozen that was downloaded. And after a while, it'll just kind of shoot into something else where all of a sudden there's like human beings playing with these little teeny tiny Elsa and Anna dolls. And I'm like, it just, I don't want to say it feels weird, but I don't trust it.
Yeah, no, it feels weird. It feels weird. It definitely yeah. does.
It does, actually. It does. It does. Yeah, no, I know. It's a lot of the same old. We did get the hoop up. The hoop is up. He made his first basket.
Nice.
Of course, it's raining. Of course, it's raining.
Yes, all weekend.
And how about, and listen to this. Listen to this. So I don't even want to say this too loud because then, so we're shooting around, right? And our street's on a little bit of a hill. And you have to be vigilant. If you miss the ball, it's going to go rifling down this damn hill. And daddy with the ruptured Achilles back in the day is not exactly about to burst after it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I'll try, but I'm not going to start sprinting out of a dead stop. And long story short, it's 7.5 feet. We go up and down and, you know, he missed a bunch, couple of air balls. He put a few in, started to gauge it a little bit. And one, he saw daddy, the ball was rolling down the hill and I was able to kind of give it a quick little pop and with my foot, almost like a soccer move, uh-huh. kind of save it. And bring it back on our grass. He actually tried to do that and replicate what I did and said he kicked it, right? So it goes flying. So, of course, and it's going down and down and down. I'm like, oh, just hit a tire, hit something. At this point, hit a nail, pop. I really don't care what happens. And so one of the construction workers stops it, throws it back. And he's like, Daddy, do we have to wash down the ball because of the coronavirus?
Oh, like, wow.
This is where we are, man.
Wow.
And you know what?
But you know what? At least he
I did.
Asked.
I
at
did.
Least, at least he asked, though. At least he's smart enough to ask.
Yeah.
I actually commend him for that.
I did. And, of course, I hosed down the whole ball and with a little bleach-based. I actually did. So I hear you. The challenge rolls on. It's we're all cooped up in our cribs. But how about this? Let's at least fast forward to the story of the day or – at least one of them. When we're cooped up at our cribs during the winter, at least in the Northeast, and so all the parts of the country that are a little bit too chilly to get outside and enjoy the outdoors during the end of football season, it looks as if strongly as if we will be treated to an extra playoff game. And this has long been rumored. It looks like it's going to be ratified tomorrow during the conference call with the owners to incorporate the 14 playoff teams, seven from each conference. That would actually be implemented this season, unlike next year with the addition of the 17th game. That won't come till 2021. So there's a lot on the table. What's your initial reaction to this? You like it?
Well, I do like this, BT, and I know a lot of people push back because it adds an extra game. I'm talking about the players. Push back because it adds an extra game and talk about player safety. But it is another game check, which is important also for some of those lesser paid stars in the NFL. But I also think it makes it worth it to be the best throughout the regular season. And so with this new adjustment to the playoff format with seven teams from each conference, that there's only one bye. All the other six teams, the six other teams in each conference have to play on wild card weekend. And so more football makes it more interesting, more at stake. And there's an extra, I guess, position to fight for. And some of those teams that were on the come but didn't quite make it or had some, last minute losses that knocked them out of the postseason can now have a reason to play week 16, 17 of the NFL season. I'm not talking about the 17-game season. There's 17 weeks in the NFL, obviously, because every team has a bye week. But it gives extra incentive down the stretch for some of those teams, which make all the games more interesting. And I also like the fact that if you are the best, you're fighting for it from the very beginning so that you get a bye. Because those byes are imperative. And we've talked about them so many times, BT, with the New England Patriots and when they don't have to play in the wild card game and they get straight to the divisional round, usually they get to the AFC championship game. We've seen it over the history of their 20-year dynasty. When they have to play in that wild card game, it doesn't work out so well for them. It's when they have that bye that it works out for them. Now there's only one team with a bye. I think it's great.
I think it's really good, too. I don't know what the objection would be outside of maybe, and I wouldn't even really necessarily embrace this as a valid argument, watering down, diluting the potency of the meaning of the regular season. I'm not necessarily buying that. Just a little walk through history so people can see maybe what it will actually mean in terms of big picture. Three times in the 90s, three of the 12 teams that made the playoffs actually reached the Super Bowl, all right, 25%. In the 2000s, there were 6 out of 12. That jumped to 50%. And in the 2010s, there were, again, 3 of the 12. Pardon me. 3. Hold on. Let me make sure I have this right, Teague. I'm sorry. Three times in the 2010s. So far less than 25%. Forget about what I just said with the percentage. Three times in the 2010s, the wild card team advanced to the Super Bowl. So that's obviously not a very high number.
Nope.
One of which was your Giants back in 2011, the Ravens in 2012, the Packers back in 2010 as well. Listen, what I like about this is that it does open the door for a team that's playing pretty crisp football at the end that may have gotten off to a bad start, may have had some injuries early, may have waited a little bit too long to go to their backup quarterback before, and when they like the Titans. Like if the Titans missed the playoffs like by a game last year, you can say, man, I would have liked to have seen what that team could have done maybe in a playoff situation. Whereas if they had the 17th or if there was an additional playoff spot, then you wouldn't have to worry about that. But if this was, say, if they finished a game out and there were only the conventional 12, then we're sitting here saying, man, that maybe we're a little deprived because the Titans were playing pretty good football for a while.
Yeah, and you also think about how in the NFL, we used to never see trades happen, right? There was never in the middle of the season, let's find a way to make ourselves better. It's either somebody who's on the bench, it has to step up and play better. Or as you mentioned, BT, you got to make a quarterback change. Like there was no way to make a catalytic change in the middle of the season in the NFL until the last 3 or 4 years where we start to see deals get made at the deadline and teams improve themselves. You have to look no farther than the Steelers when bringing in Minkah Fitzpatrick, who completely changed the makeup of that defense. And so Yeah, there's ways now that you can make yourself better midseason in football, just like you see in basketball, like you see in baseball, that make this 17th, this now seventh team that's going to make the playoffs, a much more interesting and compelling. And by the way, if the Steelers were playing this season in 2020, they make the playoffs.
That's true.
Now they probably didn't deserve it because they didn't have a quarterback worth his salt, but still, they make the playoffs. And you never know what's going to happen in the postseason, especially when you have a coach who has the experience of coaching in the postseason. So I don't see the downside other than what a lot of the players talked about during the CBA negotiations when it was being borne out. How is this good? Because it's just another game. But more guys have a chance to play in the postseason. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think any of the players would say, man, it really sucks. I'm going to get beat up for another week.
Yeah.
But I have a chance to win a champion. You know what I mean?
Correct. I get you. No, there's a trade.
I don't think that it would actually bear itself out the way that it was positioned as there was debate around this in the CBA negotiation.
Oh, it's not a preseason game. It's a chance to go and play for the Lombardi Trophy.
That's right.
Of course.
That's exactly right. It's a big difference.
No doubt. By the way, I completely mangled those numbers. So let me just give you a quick snippet because that was absolutely horrendous on my end. My bad. So I'll just use the 90s. In the 1990s, there were three teams that were a wild card team that made the Super Bowl. All right, so from 90 through 99, that is 60 complete playoff teams. So 3 out of 60 is what I was trying to say was the amount in the decade for the 90s. Same for the 2010s when it was the Ravens, Giants, and Packers. But yeah. I don't know.
But all back to back. Those three.
Yes.
It was weird. I remember that. It was all back to back to back.
Yep.
Those three wild card teams got to the Super Bowl.
2010, 2011, 2012, Packers, Giants, and Ravens in ascending order. Hey, listen, players won't object. I'm not going to object. I mean, okay, playoff game, cool. And the good thing about this is that there seems to be, now this is open for interpretation, further discussion. They're not there yet, but there's a lot of things here that at least to me tell me they're trying to spice it up and, you know, maybe make one of those games, one of the playoff games, a Monday night. And do so creatively.
Yeah.
Let's see. Rumors of the additional playoff games heading to Monday night have surfaced, though that would obviously be a tough sell for coaches due to the quick turnaround in advance to divisional round games. Day short. Really, a day and a half if you really look at it that way. The league could use both Saturday and Sunday triple headers as well. Which, who the heck's going to object to that?
That would be amazing.
Be phenomenal.
That would be the best way to do it. Because college football is done. I mean, yeah,
yes.
You got some bowl games sprinkled in here or there, but that would be the way to do it.
No doubt about it. And what's this last part? This season, we'll likely use the latter setup Saturday and Sunday. Although our buddy Peter King notes the league's discussed a 2-3-1 setup involving a Monday game and should be expected to revisit that schedule in the future. As we know, only one team at each conference earns the bye. So there's added, stress on the pursuit of that. And, I don't know what the objections would be. I don't get it. Again, the only thing that I could truly point to, and I don't even think it's a viable angle, is that it dilutes, you know, like the NBA, 1 versus 8. I mean, that offers no intrigue.
True, but in the NFL, that's never the case.
That's what I'm saying.
It's never that way. It's always, man, you could just get hot. You could be that team. Did we think the Baltimore Ravens, the year that they won the wild cut, the year you're talking about, what was that, 12? Yeah, it was 2012.
The Ravens were 2012, yep.
It was right after the New York Giants. I didn't think they were a Super Bowl team.
No.
But then they won the wild card game, and they went out and they beat Denver, right? It was a tight game, and Peyton Manning.
Peyton played poorly.
He played poorly, and John Fox kind of like took his foot off the gas, and then forget the safety. He got beat on a bad. He got beat badly. Just a bad timing on a deep ball, and the Ravens ended up going on to the Super Bowl because we were there. I remember we interviewed Jim Caldwell about what changed. Like, what changed with this offense?
Yeah,
but just turned around and handed off to Ray Rice. That's what changed.
Yeah,
right. So it was. It can happen, and so. Yeah, you can't say it's like basketball where that 1-8 matchup or, in this case, whatever it would be probably 1-7 matchup if the seventh seed advances through the wild card. You can't say that that's a bad matchup because anything can happen.
No, and again, there's an element of viability with just about every NFL team. I mean, really, this past season, with the exception of, the Redskins – the Giants, the Panthers at the end of the season. You know, maybe the Cardinals.
Cincinnati.
I was just getting to the AFC. The Bengals, the Dolphins.
I wouldn't have. The Dolphins were playing good at the end. I know what you're saying. You're throwing them in there, but.
Yeah.
They were a tough team to beat.
They definitely were.
They beat the Patriots at the end of the year.
Of course. But in the NFC, you know, the Rams finished 9-7. They were obviously out of the spot, you know, behind the Vikings, who were the sixth seed. The Bears finished 8-8. The Cowboys were 8-8. Atlanta was 7-9, and the Bucs were 7-9. And if memory serves me well, the Falcons finished strongly. I'm going to double check. I know they beat the 49ers at the end of the season. You know, who knows if the Falcons?
No, the Falcons won four games in a row. BT,
let me see here.
They were streaking.
They did. Yeah,
they were streaking. At the end of the year.
You have it in front of you?
Absolutely. They had their bye week, week 9, then 10. They beat New Orleans. They beat Carolina. They lost two in a row to Tampa and the Saints. Yep. And then they won out. Carolina, 49ers, Jacksonville, Tampa Bay Buccaneers again.
Yep.
Again, that was a Jameis Winston pick six ending that we talked to Bruce Arians about last week. But, yeah, I mean, they were on a roll at the end of the season. And so if they get into the playoffs or playing hot like that,
yeah,
MVP at quarterback and a defense that was getting a little bit healthy, you can't count them out.
Nope. Okay, so what do you think? This would obviously impact you. This would impact your weekends, obviously juggling stuff with the kids and, you know, all the things that we juggle. I mean, who wouldn't be amenable to, you know, an additional playoff game? Who wouldn't like that? 1-855-212-4227. What would give you reason to pause? Let's get to that. We'll get tweets on it as well. At Tiki and Tierney. Also, coming up next here on the show, one NFL owner, and he's got some influence, he's one of those, is optimistic about the season, but comes with a couple of catches. We'll sort through those. Coming up next, right here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney is 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. So, whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Have it at home? It's hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. It should really say, being at home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com.
All right, hope change their language during the coronavirus.
Yeah, we'll just take the liberty, Geico. We'll change it for you.
Exactly.
Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Being at home is hard work. Get a quote. Go to geico.com. All right, team, we've got inbounds, out of bounds coming up next segment. And one NBA owner maybe trying to move his team to a new city. That's on the menu. By the way, I certainly want to get those tweets going at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney, about what seems to be the inevitable expansion of two additional playoff teams, one in each conference, starting this season. We should get that resolution, that green light tomorrow. All right, let's get into this. One of the, I would say certainly, is he among the top five? Yeah, you know what, he might be. If he's not top five, he's top six or seven in terms of owners with real true juice and influence. Arthur Blank, you would agree?
Yeah, no, without a doubt he is. Great businessman before he was an owner.
Yep.
And one of the really good guys in the NFL.
Love him. We've had him on the show. We know about his empire from Home Depot. He is one of the true, just true figures of the NFL that represents good. Among many, obviously, but he's a real stand-up guy. Big fans. And here's what he told our buddy Peter King. This was for Peter's weekly Football Morning in America column. As I paraphrase, I take out the bullet points. Basically said, expects, or at least in his opinion, he is expecting the full 16-game slate. He obviously foresees fewer preseason games, which I think we'd all sign up for. But how about this? He talks about playing with no fan attendance, which obviously is a common theme for when the NBA returns, possibly some sort of modification for the start of the baseball season. But football.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You might lose me with this one. Go ahead.
So this one would be really hard because we talk about how in the NBA, and LeBron James went on about this last week on the Hang Five, whatever the podcast was, I can't remember what it was, Channing Frye's and Richard Jefferson's podcast about how the energy, like the anger that comes from like trying to show out is a lot of it's from the fans, right? And then there's something that's lost because of the intimacy of the arena in basketball. Well, it's 10 times that in the National Football League, like almost literally because of the size of the crowds. But I think more importantly, it just, when you don't play with fans, it feels like you're practicing. It feels like there's, like, who are you showing out for? And it's not that, you know, football is any different than basketball or baseball in that regard. But in baseball, you tend to hone in because someone's throwing a 90-plus mile-an-hour fastball at you, right? You kind of got to snap into focus. In football, it's a little bit different. Like, that energy that comes from the crowd often lifts you, whether it's because you're down or you're excited. It drives you in so many different ways. And without the fans, it'll feel like practice. And practice in the NFL is not anywhere close to the game. Practice in baseball is probably a little bit close to the game, like a simulated game. Practice in basketball is probably close to the actual game, like a simulated game. Practice in football is not even close to it. So I hear what he's saying, and I know that he's probably right, that if this thing hangs on into the early fall and football players are in the league is trying to get this thing done, it might have to be played without fans. But that's just going to look odd, and it's going to sound odd, and it's going to be, I think, a bad product just because of the nature of the NFL player.
This is something I have no interest in watching. None. I mean, I also sit here as we get towards April knowing we'll be locked in to our chambers for at least another month, maybe two. We'll see. So this could change quickly, but at first, in terms of my opinion, at first glance, listen, like with baseball, just to kind of go through the sports here and the actual importance of the crowd, you talk about the replication of energy, which is a very important point for sure. But, you know, you flip on a baseball game, right? And yeah, I mean, it looks bad when there's a pocket of empty seats behind home plate because the center field camera is over the pitcher's shoulder, you know, and you get that direct line behind the dish. And if there's, you know, just a broad stroke of empty seats, that kind of looks bad.
Yep.
Well, definitely, not kind of, it looks bad. Or if there's a foul ball and the camera tracks it, you know, into the upper deck, you know, just an innocuous foul ball and it rattles off an empty chair, you'll see a swath, hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands, of empty seats. Not the best look. But in terms of actually influencing the game, you know, there's nothing that a fan can do that, in my opinion, would really unnerve a baseball player.
No, because a lot of it's quiet anyways, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's calm. It's kind of calm anyways.
Well, I mean, the one you certainly get with two, maybe not as much anymore because there's so many strikeouts. But
yeah,
you know, back in the day, and it certainly Dwight Gooden was at the head of this, and others after that, where you get two strikes on somebody, the entire house stands up, and you get that raucous environment. Yeah. You know, anticipating that buzz. And if you're a hitter, maybe it makes you a little jumpy. You know, you get a little, that tension's a bit amplified. You squeeze the bat. Yeah, I could probably make a case that maybe it impacts you a little bit. If you're an outfielder and it's a full house and there's a pop-up and there's a couple of men on base and you have two or three, you know, the center fielder converging with the right fielder and the second baseman's dropping back with the shortstop and somebody's yelling, I got it.
Yeah.
And you can't really hear it because it's drowned out a bit by 50,000 maniacs in October. Okay, maybe. Yeah, sure. But football, when you talk about the line of scrimmage manipulation and offside, I mean, offside,
yeah, the loud end zone, you know what? Yeah, you know what
I'm talking about? The loud end zone, yeah.
Because that's certainly a thing. I remember it. Like, sometimes you can't hear in these places. Can you imagine being in CenturyLink Field? This is the perfect example where the Seattle Seahawks play.
Yep.
Where it's open air, but because of the design, all that sound comes up, goes up, and then comes right back down on the field. You can't hear yourself think. I remember going playing there the first time that we played there, and I like legitimately could not hear Kerry Collins in the huddle calling the play. You know, forget at the line of scrimmage, but like in the huddle, I couldn't hear him calling the play. He had to like get right in my face and say what was happening, and so like that 12th man, which is, I think they've trademarked that thing, but whatever it is, they lose that advantage. It's not as intimidating anymore to go play at CenturyLink as it previously has always been because of the crowd noise. So it's a big part of football games. It really is, because it gives you a disadvantage or a huge advantage if you're at home and your fans are amazing like they are in Seattle or like they are in Philadelphia or some of these other places, Kansas City.
Yeah, for
where,
sure.
Where it makes a huge difference, just the emotion and noise that they throw down on the opponents.
I mean, really, you know, for the most part, I think the Giants fans are louder than the Jets. Well, that depends. But Bears fans are loud. Packers, I mean, really, just outside of maybe five or six venues, depending upon, like, mm-hmm. where the Jaguars are at that place in the season or that point in the season. Miami, yep. It's a bit of a transient fan base, although I think they're starting to get their mojo together. You know, most of these places are somewhat raucous, and all these fans know how to comport themselves on third down. You know, this is part of the reason why when it comes to the NBA, I'm fully on board. Just get these guys back on the court once it's safe and once it seems like the medically prudent thing to do. Because really, what's the impact of the fans outside of ooing and aahing after a sick dunk? I mean, all right, yeah. you want to tell me, you know, when the shot clock is hovering down to four and maybe the point guard isn't quite aware of it, which never happens in the NBA. And the home crowd is injecting some urgency. Look up, look up. And because he hears the crowd look, you know, going nuts, he looks up and he's like, oh, I gotta get this thing up. Yeah, I guess. But let me ask you this. What channel? I'm going to tell you right now, actually, because I still don't know what the hell channel this is. And I'm going to get to the bottom of this right now. So I'm going through my sports channels. All right. ESPN, blah, blah, blah. Yes. SNY, MSG, home of the loser Knicks. All right. FS1, FS2, Big Ten Network, MLB Network, NHL Network. These are all that I have. NFL Network, boom, boom, boom. NBA TV, Monster Jam. That's on NBC Sports. Something about the Olympics. Tennis. Where's the one I'm looking for? Golf Channel, of course. Of course, the best CBS Sports Network, Tiki and Tierney.
There it is.
Here it is. So I guess there's a channel where they simulate video game. Like, it's a video game channel. And right now, of course, that I want it, there's no video game on. They're doing mm-hmm. something with rugby. Sevens from Australia. No, from Austin, Texas. But my point is, based on what I see on this channel that always... just really, it's confounding to me. You're telling me that we can't, at this day and age, digitally, if we had to, somebody can't digitally superimpose a raucous crowd of 80,000 people on the TV around what's actually being played? Now, that wouldn't impact the 22 guys on the field.
Yeah.
But for the aesthetics of the millions upon millions at home watching, it would make it more palatable.
Well, I think at the end of the day, like... good production can mitigate a little bit of the lack of fans for television's sake, right? By camera angles, and you know, it would kind of, you'd have to kind of get really close so it feels like you're on the sideline as opposed to taking a bird's eye view of the action. But you can mitigate the lack of fans. My biggest issue, BT, is the lack of energy in a football stadium. And I can't tell you how many times that pulls you through. Like, it just makes you feel a certain way, whether it was in Philly for me, you know, and these fans are just obnoxious as all get out, and it angers you to the point that you like LeBron said, you want to kick the fans' ass too, right? And so without that, you lose a lot, man. And we've already talked about the home field advantage, and it would be odd. I could see it for the other sports because there's more precision involved in the other sports. And I guess that's what it comes down to. Baseball, it's a precision game. Basketball, same thing. You know, you can't be off by 2 inches and knock down, you know, 25-foot three-pointer shots. You know what I mean? But football, it's a brute emotional sport. Mm. And without the emotion, you lose a lot of it.
Okay. All right. Coming up next here on Tiki and Tierney, one NBA owner trying to move his city to a new trying to move his team to a new city. Might be trying to do that. We'll get to Inbounds, Out of Bounds. That's next here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, it is time to ask the pros here, where you get a chance to ask us anything you want. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tweet us, CBS Sports Radio. Just, again, go to, just send us the tweet, at CBS Sports. God, I'm so bored in this office, dude. I'm getting tired of already staring at these freaking walls. At CBS Sports Radio, use the hashtag Ask the Pros, and make sure you stick around and listen later on. Tiki and I will answer the best one. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every single day. Every single day. Every day here. Tiki and Tierney. Next hour, so the NBA is considering a radical idea. I mean, really, at this point, anything that would possibly propose getting the athletes back on the field has got to be construed as somewhat radical because we're so far, I think we all think so far away from, you know, normalizing certainly the sporting world and let alone the rest of society, you know, Teague?
Yeah, no, you're right. So, but they need to play games, at least. We as consumers want to see them, and TV broadcasters want to show them.
That's right.
And, like, there's got to be a solution, but the solution's not – it's easier said than done. With this testing becoming a little bit, I guess, more widespread.
Far more prevalent, for
sure. I think it's going to change.
Yeah, I hope so.
This gets into the conversation we're going to have in the next hour, BT, because that would be a huge part of it. But as soon as you know who's sick or who's not and who is, you know, healthy, you can play games. But until you know that for certain, it's really hard to put guys on the court and risk spreading it even more.
Tough to dispute that. All right, inbounds, out of bounds. You good?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
Okay, back to our guy, Jameis Winston. Jameis led the NFL in passing yards a year ago, but nobody seems to want him after the Bucs chose not to resign him. Now, last week, our friend, Bucs head coach Bruce Arians, gave his thoughts on what Jameis should do in 2020.
I think for him, it's to get into somewhere as a backup right now. It looks like all the starting jobs are done.
Yeah.
Get in somewhere where he can sit, learn a system, maybe a year for an older person and take over, or get in competition with a younger guy. And because he is a super talented and a super hard-working guy.
Okay, there you go. Now odds makers are putting odds on where Jameis will wind up, with the Jaguars leading the way, followed by the Dolphins are in there. You got the Saints, the Broncos, the Steelers, and the Pats. Now the Jaguars have Gardner Minshew as their starter after trading for Nick Foles, as we know. In or out, the Jaguars are the best landing spot for Jameis Winston.
Well, I talked about this last week a little bit, BT, and I thought the Patriots were obviously a good fit. There's a handful of teams that make a ton of sense because he's just better than the starter that's out there, whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or the Colts. I position him better than Phillip Rivers simply because of his future. But the Jaguars were on that list, as were the Chargers. But I'm going to say inbounds to this, BT, because not only does it give Jameis Winston a chance to win the starting job from Gardner Minshew or be better than Joshua Dobbs, I think there's a huge opportunity for the Jags to be relevant again. Right now, they feel like they're waffling. Like they're in limbo, but kind of resetting, but not really, because they signed some players. So I'm going to say inbounds of this one. I think Jacksonville would do well to bring Jameis in. If for nothing else, then to push Gardner to become better than he already was last season.
I'm going to say a hard out of bounds on this. I don't think that makes any sense for me, for him to even go to the Jaguars. But again, admittedly, there's two components here, and they're different. One is what's best for the team, and one is what's best for Jameis. Now, if you say, well, what's good for the team? I mean, yeah, I guess if I'm the Jaguars and I could get him on a relatively frugal deal and, you know, he's obviously motivated to play well and reestablish some value when there's maybe not so many quarterbacks on the open market next year and kind of change the perception. Yeah, I guess that might work out a little bit. But for Jameis, and I'm answering this from Jameis's point of view, which is why I say out of bounds. Jameis needs to go somewhere and he's got to reboot and he's got to reset and he's got to reboot and he's got to reset without the expectations of the franchise on him. Now, if he goes to Jacksonville and he's not the starter right away, you can say, well, that kind of qualifies from your criteria about not rebooting as the central figure. But I don't love Doug Marrone. I mean, what is Doug Marrone going to do for him? I don't love their weapons. I don't like their setup. They're terrible. The Jaguars might be the worst team in football. All they've done is lose players. Forget about Eddie. They've lost all their good players. I think the best place for him to go is what I said a month ago, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And get behind Big Ben, who's got a similar style, all right? Big, strong, not afraid to just rear back and let it rip. And if Big Ben's not ready to play, Jameis steps in. You get yourself around Mike Tomlin and a professional organization. Not that, you know, Bruce Arians, of course, is professional, but the Steelers are as buttoned up as it gets. That's what I would do. And then I would try to, you know, just quietly change how I go about my job and eventually how I'm perceived, and that would lead to a better job. So I'm going to say out of bounds to the Jaguars being the best landing spot.
Are you in or are you out?
Let's get to Gordon Hayward, former All-Star, signed a four-year, $128 million deal with the Celtics back in the summer of 2017. That seems like a million years ago, doesn't it?
It does, and it's only two.
Man, jeez. However, the fourth and final year, which would be next season, is a player option for $34 million. Now, in nearly three seasons, he's appeared in 118 games while averaging 14 points a night after suffering the gruesome injury really in the first 5 minutes of his debut. There's now various reports that say Hayward is expected to opt in to the final year rather than opt out. So, in or out, if Hayward plays well the rest of this season and next, he is worth another big multi-year contract.
I'm going to say inbounds of this, BT, because I know that those numbers sound low that were issued here. But if you just look at this season alone, where he's fully healthy and finding his role, he's averaging 17 points a game. He's at an all-time high of field goal percentage. He's even above his career average in three-point shooting percentage. His rebounds are up. His assists are up. He's actually playing great basketball right now that he's found his role. Now, a big-time contract is relative. Like, nobody should be making $38 million a year. But should someone commit to him for the long haul as a veteran who's a really good player? I'd say absolutely, inbounds.
Yeah, I'd be okay with this as well. I'm not going to run to the bank and say, oh, Gordon, please, here's a contract. Please sign us. Please sign it. No, he's not that kind of player. But if he was to get a similar, in 4 years, at even though he's 30, it's not like the old days where, Garnett, who was worth every penny, gets a 10-year deal. I mean, those days are over.
No.
So,
yeah,
right. You know what I mean?
That's just not smart anymore.
No, it's not. It's not. So you can craft this in a way that that justifies, based on his strength, shooting the ball, some positional versatility. I like him. I don't love him. But here's the thing. There's a lot of guys making north of 40 mil. So, a contract for him in the neighborhood of, low to mid 30s. I don't want to say that it's a steal, but there are far worse deals, and he hasn't played a lot. So, you know he's better than this.
Yes.
I would say inbounds. I think you're right.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, so the Grizzlies moved from Memphis, from Vancouver in 2001, but have largely hovered around mediocrity in the state of Tennessee. Now, despite 10 playoff appearances in the 18 years since the move, the Grizz have only gotten out of the first round three times into the conference championship once. That was a sweep to the Spurs. Now, reports out of Memphis say that their owner, Robert Pera, inquired about moving the team last August. Memphis has the 51st largest media market in the entire country, smallest in the NBA, third smallest ahead of just Buffalo and Green Bay, in all of the four major United States sports. So the Grizzlies should leave Memphis for a larger market. In or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds of this, BT. And really what I looked at to base my feelings on this was the attendance. Mm-hmm. And the attendance over the last couple of years has been below 90%, which is bad, especially when your arena is only 16,500 or something like that, 1,000. And so, but if you go back, like to 2015, you find this bump all of a sudden. It's like, wow, they had 96% attendance in 2015. And you go back even farther, back to 2012, when they were up in 93 and 94. People will come in Memphis and support the team if you're winning, right? This was Lionel Hollins' days when they were winning 56 games a season. And then Jaeger comes in and they win 52 games in one of those seasons. But it's the product. It's why people aren't embracing the Memphis Grizzlies. And so I think the focus should be more on your general manager more so than on moving the team someplace else where basketball might be more, I guess, loved. I think they like basketball, but they need a good product.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a tough one. I've got a lot of respect for Memphis. The Memphis high school scene is terrific, basketball-wise. I'm going to say inbounds with the caveat. I don't want to say that they should definitely leave, so I'm kind of half answering this, but I'm certainly okay with exploring what might be out there. You see, the problem is, like most NBA cities, when you have a good team, you have a vibrant arena.
Yep.
The key is, can you find a more vibrant market that is a little more tolerable when things are lackluster? And that's, to me, what defines a market. I mean, again, any city that's winning games, it's going to have a sizzle. It's going to be popping, man. I mean, you know, I just remember when I was in Detroit, there were 20,000 people at the old Palace of Auburn Hills every year, every night, because they had Big Ben and they had Rick Carlisle and they were winning 50 games and threatening for a championship. As soon as they became bad, even now that they moved downtown into the new arena, it's pretty much empty. So if you win, that should not be the sole determinant there. I at least need to do my homework and come up with two or three other markets, do a real in-depth study on viability and make the determination. Okay, at our apex, we'll flourish everywhere. But when we're middle of the road, will we be more viable economically than we are now? And my answer is there are places like that for sure, one of which, of course, would be Las Vegas, if you could ever swing that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a few other cities around the United States that might have a say in that as well. St. Louis? Are you telling me St. Louis wouldn't be a good basketball city?
True, but I look at the Memphis Grizzlies, BT, and I'm trying to find, like, who is the star?
Well, it's Jaren Jackson.
They've been around. I mean, I'm talking about like over the. They
and Ja.
Came in 1995. Who's the. Yeah, Ja is now.
And Ja.
And so
of
that
course.
Might change it.
Sharif Abdul Rahim was the guy early.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, trust me. It's,
was he an all timer?
No. No.
They need an all timer. Maybe it's Ja. You'll see.
All right. Coming up, hour number two. All right. Radical idea to get the season back on the rails for the NBA, but. Is it too radical? Tiki and I'll hit that coming up next, hour two, CBS Sports Radio.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.